Here in these early days of August, there's a beautiful sound coming from St. Joseph, Missouri. It's the sound of pads popping, of news happening, of players being shuffled around. It is full contact training camp time, and here on Roughing the Kicker, I'm ready to talk about it because there is a lot to go through. 1 week of full contact stuff, and we've got hours of news that I'm going to whittle down for about half an hour for your easy consumption through your ears. Thanks for joining me here on Roughing the Kicker on Arrowhead Addict Radio, arrowheadaddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. You can get in touch with me on Twitter at JBBriscoe or in the comments on Arrowhead Addict. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you like it, tell your friends whatever you feel like. You can live your own life. On this episode, it's all about training camp and what you need to know from this week. There's so much news, so many stories, so much to talk about. Looking at some highlights from some of the rookies, especially Marcus Peters. Guys like Jay Howard right now are really under the spotlight because he has to step in for Dontari Poe. The wide receivers are already putting together a couple of highlight tapes. The offensive line might be the most interesting cocktail right now because guys are getting moved around, and at least one surprising thing, especially on the Chiefs' official depth chart, which I'll talk about, really surprised almost everyone who's been paying attention. Let's get into it. Now, I'm going to go ahead and take everything in chronological order here, just looking at the highlights from each day of camp from this last week, starting back on Monday. Adam Teicher tweeted after practice had wrapped up, said, "Huge day for Marcus Peters. Four interceptions and a couple passes broken up. Looks like he belongs." And then also at RealMN Chiefs fan on Twitter said, "Gotta wonder if it's any coincidence that Marcus Peters has his best day the moment full contact is allowed. Presses like a maniac." This is a really interesting opportunity to look into Marcus Peters a little bit here. We've talked about, I think last week is when I talked about how he'll have to step in for Sean Smith. That might have been 2 weeks ago. I can't remember anymore. But we all know he's going to have to step in for Sean Smith with those three games where Smith is suspended for his DUI. Peters, the best way for Peters to stand up against a guy like Jordy Nelson and Demaryius Thomas, which is probably what he's going to have to do, at least for parts of those Week 2 and Week 3 games, is by pressing. If Peters can initiate contact and has his best day the moment full contact is allowed, that's going to be a key strength for him and this team. Now, on the other side, when Sean Smith is gone, Phillip Gaines, he's not that natural punisher right at the line. He fits more into the slot, the slot coverage position naturally, but whenever Sean Smith's out, it won't be an option. And Gaines has played very well on the outside, don't get me wrong there. But if Peters can have that, and currently does have that, immediate kind of killer instinct for jamming a big physical receiver on the line instead of just trying to run with him, that's when you can mess up the timing between a guy like Demaryius Thomas or Jordy Nelson and the quarterback. Demaryius Thomas is going to out-physical almost every cornerback in the league. There is a very short list of corners who are going to be bigger or stronger than Demaryius Thomas. And there are very few corners who are faster than some of the speedier receivers in the NFL. But if you can jam a guy, if you can get him off his route a little bit, screw up the timing between him and the quarterback, you can create some major disruptions. And that's something you can even do as a rookie. If Peters can do that and then run with the guy a little bit, that's enough to make that quarterback look off that first target and go, "Well, I was going to go to Thomas here, but he got jammed to the line. He lost his route a little bit. Peters is still hanging with him. He's not wide open or anything. I'm going to just look off and go somewhere else." And if Peters can do that consistently and just limit the number one receiving option in those week two and week three games, that's going to be an enormous asset for this defense. And then as he continues to improve that skill in the NFL with NFL coaches, which he will, and then continues to improve the rest of his abilities also, I think we're going to see Marcus Peters develop into, at the very least, a very nice cornerback, a guy who you can always have at that second corner spot and really feel good about. And throughout this season, the Chiefs are going to have to figure out, you know, if they want Steven Nelson, Phil Gaines, and Marcus Peters to be the three corners of the future, or if they want to sign Sean Smith in the offseason. I still think they will let Sean Smith walk after this season ends. But they have a whole season to figure out what they expect from Marcus Peters. But if Peters can shine early and can be using his physical presence immediately, that's going to make those first 3 weeks a whole lot less painful than we thought they might be. Also on Monday, the Chiefs signed LaDainian Washington, the wide receiver from Missouri, who has quite a story. He lost both of his parents by the time he was a sophomore. And then, according to this article originally from USAtoday.com, his best friend was murdered when he was 15. So, personally, he's got quite a backstory there. But then, just from a football perspective, an injury that really made me squirm when I first heard him talking about it. He said, quote, Back in Pittsburgh in camp, I split my calf in two and tore it off the bone. I didn't know it originally, so overnight I had internal bleeding. I was wondering why my leg was going numb and I couldn't sleep. That gives me chills. I don't know how to follow that up with any other words. That's an absolutely horrifying, horrifying sounding injury. So for him to be on the Chiefs right now, a Mizzou guy, with all of that, again, the personal adversity is one thing, and then just the pure football injury adversity there is really an interesting story, and the Chiefs are bringing in receivers, which is a great thing. I'm always glad to see more receivers brought into the Chiefs' mill. And so just got to keep an eye on there. At that point, Chris Conley and Junior Hemingway were both injured, as they still are, but the Chiefs then had 14 receivers on the roster, counting those two injured guys. So we really have no idea if Washington will stick around or not, but that's certainly a guy to keep an eye on, especially when you just hear again the phrase, my calf split in two and tore off the bone. You can't help but root for him, even if you weren't a Chiefs fan. So that was it for the first day of full pad training camp on Monday. Now over on Tuesday, Terrence Paylor, one of his observations was Ben Grubbs, the first offensive lineman I've seen adequately withstand Bailey's bull rush. So Alan Bailey has been having a good training camp so far. I mean, I guess that was technically just through the first 2 days, but that has extended. Bailey's presence last year was really, really substantial in a way where he actually took a step that I think is underrated among Chiefs fans, because he plays a non-glamorous position. The defensive end in a 3-4 scheme, you don't see the pressure there as often as you do from the outside linebackers. You don't see the pressure up the middle as often as you do from the nose tackle, or even hear talk about it as often. But Alan Bailey had a really great season last year, was rewarded with a contract, and now his bull rush has continued to just run over everybody in camp, though, except for Ben Grubbs here, according to Paylor. Ben Grubbs holding his own at left guard is also going to be a huge, important piece for the Chiefs going forward. I'll talk more about the offensive line in a little bit. He said Jeff Allen also did a nice job on Mike DeVito. Paylor also tweeted one of the most interesting and important players, at least for the beginning of the season, in my opinion. He wrote, Jay Howard continues to be disruptive. Penetration on the run up the middle by Charkandrick West. This is huge. Jay Howard's presence is going to be enormous for the Chiefs, or it's going to be a huge problem, but his presence or lack thereof will be very impactful. If he can hold down the middle of that defensive line as Dontari Poe does, then that's going to leave Bob Sutton with a whole lot more to play with. One of the benefits of having a guy like Dontari Poe who can anchor the inside of your offensive or of your defensive line without ever questioning his ability is he eats up those two guys in the middle. He gets pressure up in the middle, and then every one of your other pieces is still free to do weird stuff with. You know, I've talked about bringing in Dee Ford along with Tomba and Justin Houston and blitzing all three of them. Well, you might not be able to do that if you need a run stuffer behind Jay Howard. You can't put Dee Ford in the middle. Dee Ford would just be there to pass rush. You know, but if Dontari Poe's in the middle, you know that first level, there's not going to be that second level penetration from the offensive line, because Dontari Poe is going to demand that both the center and one of the guards devote their entire effort onto keeping Dontari Poe where he began. But if that's not the case, if one person can pick up Jay Howard, and that second guy gets penetration, Dee Ford gets chipped, and there's a run up right up the middle for 60 yards and a touchdown, or at least it gets all the way over to the safeties, can finally clean up the mess. But if Jay Howard can be that forceful presence in the middle, that's going to be huge for giving Bob Sutton all of those options. Now, I believe that if Jay Howard can't hold down the middle like Dontari Poe does, then Sutton will devote some of those pieces to keeping the middle of the run defense and just middle of the defense in general in good shape. Stopping the run up the middle, trying to help with getting a pass rush up the middle right over the center, which is something that Poe is so good at. So I think Sutton will account for Poe's disappearance, even if it's not just Jay Howard, if he has to mix a couple guys together, maybe run some more 4-3 defenses, whatever it takes, Bob Sutton's going to do that. But if he doesn't have to worry about bringing in other guys to account for it, and Howard can continue to be disruptive and dominant, that's going to leave this defense in a really wonderful position. And then Poe can take his time coming back, and then once he is back, Poe and Howard can have a little bit of a platoon where both guys don't have to take 100% of the wear and tear like Poe has in years past. So I'm keeping a very close eye on Jay Howard through training camp. He's going to be very important going forward. Also on Tuesday, Sherrod and Zach Fulton, both saw first-team snaps on the right side. Usually it had been Donald Stevenson and Jeff Allen. So that's an interesting tweak that came early in the week, but again, the offensive line has been all over the place. Just keep that in mind as we go forward here. Phil Gaines left practice early with an injury. He ended up coming back. That was not a problem. Bob Sutton said on Tuesday, what I just talked about, that they're going to need to manage Poe's return whenever he comes back. But Sutton said he likes Howard, DeVito, and Williams all in the middle. And at this point, you've got to feel good about Jay Howard. If Mike DeVito can play just defensive end and not have to worry about playing in the middle, that would be a nice luxury. But if DeVito can also, you know, give Howard a little bit of a spell here and there, I feel very good about that. And then Williams there is Nick Williams, who got a couple of snaps last season. Bob Sutton didn't mention Raheem Nunez-Roches, which is slightly worrying, but the coaching staff in training camp and the second day of padded-on training camp, the coaches aren't going to give exponential praise to the rookies who haven't earned it yet. So I understand that you would say Nick Williams here instead of saying Nunez-Roches, but I would have my fingers crossed at least that we see Nunez-Roches get a spot on the team, on the active roster, especially with Poe being out. If he didn't, that'd be, yeah, it would just be a sixth-round pick that never made any impact at all. And it seems to have the physical tools to have an actual impact in the league, and if nothing else, is a little bit of a project. You invest a draft pick in these guys, so you obviously want to root for them to perform well. And that's just how it works. But if someone outperforms Nunez-Roches and he can't find a spot on the team because Howard and Nick Williams and DeVito all play so well, I guess that's a good problem. But you always want your draft picks to make the roster. Speaking of, Dave Taub said that DJ Alexander, the rookie, said he's going to have to make the team on special teams. This is the exact same vein. You want your guys. He's one of the inside linebackers that was drafted. The Chiefs took two in the middle rounds. DJ Alexander is one of the two. You want to see your draft picks make the team. Now, an inside linebacker, a rookie, a speedy guy, you also expect him to be a big factor in special teams. He's a middle of the depth chart, maybe bottom end of the depth chart guy going forward. So him being a special teams factor, giving Taub as many special teams weapons as possible, I am completely for. But for every draft pick that you release before you ever get to an actual regular season game, that's kind of defeating. The biggest news that came out of the NFL on Tuesday was not from Kansas City, but was from the team the Chiefs will be playing in Week 1. That came from Houston. Texans running back Arian Foster came up limping on a pass play. It turned out to be a severe groin injury. Foster's now had surgery, and his return time, I've heard 3 months thrown around as the general guess for when Foster returns. Which is, it always is sad to see players get hurt in training camp. But for the Chiefs' sake, just looking at how this affects the Chiefs directly, no Arian Foster in Week 1 against the Texans is a huge break. We don't know how Jay Howard's going to step up. Arian Foster was going to run up the middle of this defense, or at least try to. But now the Texans, they have J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney. It's going to be an enormous test for the offensive line right out of the gate in Houston on the road in the NFL. It's hard to win on the road, especially with that kind of defense. But the offense in Houston is Brian Hoyer, and I think Alfred Blue is probably the top running back on the team right now. So there's nothing to fear offensively in Houston. So I hope Arian Foster returns quickly, just not Week 1 quickly. If he comes back Week 2, I'd be thrilled, and it'd be a medical miracle. So that was not only the biggest news in the NFL, but I think also the biggest news for the Chiefs that day, because that hopefully then leads to the Chiefs getting off on the right foot, going into a very difficult beginning of the season stretch they're going to have to face whenever those regular season games actually begin. Now, on Wednesday, the offensive line started to get even more out of whack. At Chiefs reporter tweeted, after five plays, Mitch Morse comes in at center, Zach Fulton the right guard, and Jeff Allen moves from right guard to right tackle, rotating a lot of guys there. That all makes sense. You have Cush in the middle first, Fulton is out, and Allen is playing right guard. You let Donald Stevenson play right tackle. That all makes sense. But then to have Morse come in, get his snaps in the middle, I still like Zach Fulton at right guard very much, and then Jeff Allen getting his plays at right tackle. Right tackle is probably the most insecure place on this team right now, if I had to designate one specific position. No big eyebrow raising there, but just something to take note of. Also on the offensive line, Eric Fisher said he's come strides by this point with the playbook. According to PG Sween on Twitter, he said he believes playing next to Grubbs has been really good for him. And it probably has, and Grubbs has said similar things back to Fisher. So hopefully that Fisher-Grubbs side-by-side is going to benefit both of them, and I think it will. That's something I said originally whenever Grubbs was signed, and one of the reasons I think Eric Fisher's going to have a nice season is last year Eric Fisher was playing next to a human turnstile on the offensive line. Mike McGlynn couldn't stop anybody. I don't have any personal disdain for Mike McGlynn, but he just couldn't play guard in the NFL anymore. Ben Grubbs is a real NFL left guard, and Ben Grubbs is going to learn things about this team and this team's playbook from Eric Fisher. Eric Fisher is going to benefit hugely from playing next to a real Pro Bowl left guard. It's going to be a symbiotic relationship. They're both going to benefit from that. I like that relationship a lot. Let's take a break from the timeline now and dive into a couple of articles. One by Jason Lockenfora on CBSSports.com. He wrote about the Chiefs, but two parts of his article here I found especially interesting. One was him writing about Andy Reid continuing to develop quarterbacks. And he essentially talks about the contract situation for Chase Daniel and Alex Smith and Aaron Murray progressing. And that's all well and good. But the interesting point here is that he thinks that Chase Daniel's a better option than what a lot of teams are starting. So if an injury were to happen some point through the season, that Chase Daniel might be a viable trade option. But the Chiefs would only want to do that if they believed in Aaron Murray's development. Right now, we haven't really seen any huge signs of that so far, which is kind of underwhelming, but we also haven't really seen many chances for him to show that. So this preseason and all through training camp will be a nice place for him to showcase what he could possibly do, and if the Chiefs would consider trading Chase Daniel down the line or even potentially releasing him before the season to save some cap space, but I think that ship has sailed. And then Jason Lockenfora wrote and asked the question, will the Chiefs wheel and deal? Quote, the Chiefs really like youngster Tyler Bray, and I get the sense wouldn't be averse to making a deal. If teams get short at quarterback, a Green Bay or Pittsburgh, for instance, KC could be the first phone call. Murray coming along and Daniel has won games in the league. Which is sort of echoing his previous point. The other trade issue that Lockenfora brings up here, I think, is actually slightly more interesting just because I don't have any huge faith in Tyler Bray or Aaron Murray yet. Lockenfora writes, the Chiefs could end up dealing a safety. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they did, maybe even sooner rather than later. They have about six who can play, and with the Ravens losing Matt Elam for the season, for instance, maybe there's a trade match. Former Ravens high pick Arthur Brown, who has rarely seen the field, is having a decent camp, and he's someone teams have probed before. Also, a couple of things Lockenfora doesn't do much diving into there. Obviously, with Eric Berry returning, that adds some depth to the safety position. Chiefs just signed Tyvon Branch. Hussein Abdullah is in really good shape. He's done some good things for this team already. And Ron Parker obviously just got his deal. So I would be perfectly happy to run with those four guys as your top four safeties. If any of them get hurt, you want to do some sort of different packages, whatever. Having those four guys locked in is a fantastic luxury. But whoever those five or six guys are, you know, if you want to look at Arthur Brown, that's fine by me. However, none of those trades would be particularly blockbuster. So that's something you get to keep an eye on, but isn't especially imminent. Another article I want to look at now, also from back on Wednesday, Matt Verderame here on Arrowhead Addict wrote five things we had learned this far, which, again, was back on Wednesday. One was Jay Howard looks very good. There are some gifts and everything. Jay Howard's presence, as I talked about earlier, has been felt through camp, which is a huge, huge point so far for all the reasons I talked about just a few minutes ago. Matt's second point that he wrote about is that the offensive line is looking set in stone. He writes, on Tuesday, the Chiefs changed the starting group for the first time since camp opened. For the first 3 days, it was Eric Fisher, Ben Grubbs, Eric Cush, Jeff Allen, and Donald Stevenson from left to right. On Tuesday, Allen and Stevenson were moved to the second team, replaced by Zach Fulton and Derek Sherrod. Well, I actually think at this point that's not as set in stone as we would have thought because of how things continue to develop, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But there are a lot of questions still with that offensive line, especially one surprise that I'm still saving for some reason. Point three is that Marcus Peters is legit. He continued to show these flares through all through the first week of camp. Although he's had some struggles here and there, he's a rookie in training camp. You would expect him to, but he's continued to show these flashes, and that's obviously a very good thing. I talked about that earlier as well. Also, Matt pointed out that Alex Smith and Jeremy Maclin have some work to do. They've also had some nice plays, some good interactions, and then some that were a little bit rusty. Alex Smith is going to have to hit Jeremy Maclin during the actual season on the deep balls. In training camp, that's a time where that timing issue gets worked out and you get comfortable with your receivers. I'm not going to panic about that until it's not happening in like week four of the regular season. The Chiefs had Thursday off, and then on Friday we're back at it. One other article, though, that gave a nice summary a few days ago came from Adam Teicher, who was writing for ESPN.com. He put together a first week awards column, essentially, which is a little silly by its concept, but it provides, again, a good summary and good talking points here. The star of camp, Teicher, gave to Marcus Peters. He says, the Chiefs had just 6 interceptions all of last season. Rookie quarterback Marcus Peters, a first-round draft pick, had 3 on the first day of padded practice. Peters followed up with a couple of passes broken up the next day. He's an ideal player to be the star of the early portion of camp. The Chiefs are going to need him in the first 3 games when number one quarterback Sean Smith will be suspended by the NFL. Continue talking about Marcus Peters, and his name is going to come up even more from the practices that happened over the weekend. Disappointment of camp comes from Adam Teicher, a story we haven't talked about yet here on this show, surrounding Chris Conley. Adam Teicher writes, wide receiver Chris Conley, a third-round draft pick from Georgia, looked during offseason practice like he might be more advanced than even the Chiefs believed. The Chiefs began camp with the hope that Conley could earn some playing time and help energize what had been a sluggish passing game. But Conley injured his knee on the first day of rookie camp and hasn't practiced since. His injury doesn't have the look of one that would keep him out for a long period, but he's missed crucial time already, and every day he remains on the sideline reduces the chance that he'll be able to help the Chiefs this season. Slightly overdramatic on some level, also very true on another. Every day he misses is certainly detrimental to him getting involved early on, for sure. I've seen reports of him, people saying that he's been doing a good job of getting his quote-unquote mental reps in. But if you're not taking reps on the field, you're sliding down the depth chart. Now, Chris Conley is in no danger of not making the team, but, you know, he's always going to get the nod over those fringe guys. He was a third-round draft pick with huge talent, so that's not even a question. But he might not be able to actually get up the speed by the first half of the season. If he's really behind in training camp, maybe this lingers into the preseason. No one has reported this is a long-term injury. Even Teicher says right there, it doesn't have the look of being a long-term injury. But the fact that it keeps keeping him out, and there hasn't been any obvious advancement, really, does definitely concern me. So if he's missing time in training camp, which is already happening, and then into the preseason, you just wonder what's going to happen when he actually gets on the field for the first time. Against any, you know, NFL competition, NFL speed. Now, he has NFL speed, but even just this pro physicality that comes around. You've got to get a little bit of that in training camp and then get even more of a dose of that in the actual preseason. And then once the actual season comes around, it amps up even another level. And I think Conley will be able to rise to that. But the longer he waits, the less effective he'll be early in the season, is how I would change Teicher's statement about the lesser of a chance he has of helping the Chiefs this entire season. The surprise of camp comes from Adam Teicher, is a surprising name here. We talked about running backs last week with all of the movement that the Chiefs had. The surprise of camp so far from Teicher is running back Charkandrick West. He wrote that he's repeatedly shown the ability to make big plays, particularly as a receiver. West doesn't figure to get much playing time with Jamal Charles and Al Davis on the depth chart ahead of him, but if the Chiefs lose Charles to injury or he needs relief, West could be a better option than Davis when they want to throw the ball. Davis has continued to struggle catching passes. West doesn't have that problem. This is a great advancement here. I talked last week about the Chiefs' need of a third running back. I would like to see them have a third running back, in a more physical mold. Not necessarily stereotypical. I'm not asking for Peyton Hillis to return from the dead, but I would have expected that third guy to be more of a either a long-term project or more of a pounder, less of a guy who's just around to catch passes. But if West's pass blocking can take a step up and he can really be a consistent pass catcher, that's absolutely a good way to spell Charles. If you want to give the ball to Davis in short yardage, I don't love that. I would rather see Charles get the ball in legitimately, with no exaggeration. There is not a single situation in my mind where I would rather have a healthy Jamal Charles be on the bench in favor of a healthy Al Davis getting the ball. Not a single situation. And that's obviously because Jamal Charles is fantastic in all facets of the game. Goes back to that LeBron of football thing that I totally support. Nothing wrong with wanting Charles to have the ball as much as possible, but whenever Charles does need to get a breather, this gives you the chance to have a guy who can play his passing game position with West, and a guy who you trust more with the ball up the gut with Davis. That gives the Chiefs a little bit of flexibility with the running back position. It's a very good thing. Teicher also awarded a play of camp, and now there have been some highlights in the last couple of days since Teicher wrote this story that would supersede this in my mind, but he says this isn't about the actual play itself, but about what the play essentially stands for. Talking about on the second play in the first full squad practice, quarterback Alex Smith took a deep drop and connected with wide receiver Jeremy Maclin on a long pass. The deep ball has to return to the Chiefs' offense this season. If not, it'll be difficult for them to make the playoffs. Now, I think there are a lot of ways where the Chiefs use the strengths they have aside from the deep passing game and really make their offense shine. In fact, that's how I expect most of their offense to be. A lot of Albert Wilson, DeAnthony Thomas, you know, those slot guys, even Jason Avant, those slot guys getting a lot of action. Hopefully Chris Conley. But being able to stretch the field with Jeremy Maclin is very important, if not just for being able to get a big play, for making the defense account for it. Last year, the defense never had to account for the deep pass even being an option because Dwayne Bowe rarely ran them, and the second receiver on the team was Albert Wilson, who was a slot guy, and then the third receiver on the team was probably Jason Devon, I guess, for the most part. There was never a stretch the field guy. That's where the Chiefs went and got Jeremy Maclin, believe me. Andy Reid didn't go get Jeremy Maclin just for the sake of having him as a threat on the field. Jeremy Macklin's going to be a huge part of this offense. But just the threat of Jeremy Maclin and seeing Alex Smith be able to do that in real games a handful of times, if that happened once or twice per game, where they, even if they didn't connect on a 40-yard, close to connecting on a 40-yard one once, and then you connect on another time, the defense always has to be prepared for that as an actual threat, which was never the case last season. More praise for Marcus Peters came out of the team on Friday when Hussein Abdullah said, quote, "That kid's a future star. We're fortunate to have him in our group." High praise from a veteran in the secondary to a rookie who hasn't stepped on the actual field yet. And I think that's a good, legitimate thing. There's no reason to proclaim someone a future star who hasn't done anything unless you really believe it. So I hope that's certainly true. DeAnthony Thomas had a ridiculous play. He was lined up against Phillip Gaines. This was tweeted around quite a bit whenever it happened. He was lined up on Phillip Gaines. Thomas ran out maybe 5 yards or so, but then put on a little juke and a cut across the middle, and Phillip Gaines basically ran out of the frame. DeAnthony Thomas went wide open across the middle. I cannot wait to see that happen in actual games against non-Chiefs defenders, because that makes me worry for Phillip Gaines getting beat. But those quick feet, that kind of movement, and those cuts for DeAnthony Thomas, that's what's going to make him so brutal to cover as a wide receiver, and that's what I'm looking forward to more than anything else, to see how his game develops. I think he could be a stretch-the-field threat on some level just because he has that crazy speed, but if he can make cuts like that on a frequent basis, it's going to be impossible to cover him consistently with just one guy. Now, on Saturday, the offensive line really got jumbled up a little bit. Donald Stevenson took second-team reps at left tackle, as he should, because he's either going to be the starting right tackle or will be the swing backup. Then the rest of the offensive line, the entire offensive line, I guess should say, was then Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, Eric Cush, Paul Faniaka, and then Pugsley, which that's the first time I've heard that name. They're playing on the second team, I'm assuming, it from Herbie Teope, the Kansas City Star beat writer on Twitter. The offensive line has been all over the place, and the name there that I know it's the first time I've said his name so far is Paul Faniaka. Then over on Sunday, Teope also tweeted, second straight day, Mitch Morris at center and Zach Fulton at right guard on the first team offense with Jeff Allen at right tackle. It happened 2 days in a row. That was a new development, which is reflected in the Chiefs' depth chart, which I'll dive into just after I wrap up what I'm talking about here on Sunday. On Sunday, Adam Teicher also tweeted, it's the first time he's seen Marcus Peters with a first-team defense playing corner in place of Sean Smith, which is what will actually have to happen through the first 3 weeks of the season. Trez Paylor said Maclin had an incredible catch. It was tipped up into the air. He cupped it against his helmet, caught it going to the ground. That was the play of the week so far. That's on Twitter. You can find that video. Cairo Santos hit a 65-yard field goal, although Dave Taub said that after asked how Cairo Santos had been, Taub said, quote, "After today was not a great day." So Cairo Santos has been a little bit all over the place, though he has the power. He has not been very consistent so far. Also, at by Lindsay H. Jones on Twitter tweeted, "Chiefs practice today was the most physical of the five teams I've seen so far. Real hitting, tackling to the ground, that's rare these days." I think it's interesting that the Chiefs are keeping a physical, upbeat training camp when in a lot of cases you're not getting that kind of hitting elsewhere in the league. One other injury note that's came out of Sunday, Dee Ford was being treated for a concussion. Currently, as I record this, in the very, very early hours on Monday morning, there's no update on Dee Ford's concussion. Now, though, keeping that Paul Faniaka thing in mind, let's look at the first official depth chart that came from the Chiefs on Friday. few interesting notes here on the depth chart. First, let's go and start with receiver, where it's Jeremy Maclin is the number one receiver on the top, and the number one receiver on the other side is Albert Wilson, which is not a surprise, but it's just what it's currently listed at. And then Jason Avant and DeAnthony Thomas are the number two receivers on either side. And there's a lot of depth there. LaDainian Washington, which I talked about earlier, he's behind Deron Brown, the undrafted free agent that we talked about a little bit a few weeks back. Chris Conley is the absolute bottom of the depth chart because he hasn't taken a snap since rookie minicamp and he got hurt that first day. Junior Hemingway has also had injury issues. He's at the bottom of the depth chart. Both of those guys are likely to move up, although Hemingway's spot definitely seems like it is really in peril. Eric Fisher starting left tackle, no surprise there. Ben Grubb starting left guard. But the big surprise here is the left guard depth chart behind Ben Grubbs. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif is the second string left guard, and third string is Paul Faniaka, who is getting some pretty real money from the Chiefs. According to overthecap.com, I think it's actually Faniaka, but I continually say it wrong. Faniaka is getting a $750,000 guaranteed base salary this year, and then his signing bonus, almost $600,000, prorated throughout the 3 years of his deal that he just got. He just signed a three-year contract with the Chiefs, and he would be $1.75 million in dead money this year, $1.1 next year, and that signing bonus, almost $600,000 in dead money that third year. If the Chiefs signed him early, as they did, and then ended up releasing him before they ever played a game, that would be a pretty big mistake. Now, not the size of mistake it would be if they were to cut Ben Grubbs or something, which is obviously not on the table on any level. But this is a concerning development, I would say, at least from a salary cap perspective. Now, on the other hand, this sort of goes back to my Zach Fulton point on if the younger, higher ceiling guy can beat out the guy with a bigger cap number, the older guy that you're just trying to trust more, I'm okay with that. That's not a bad thing to me. If Zach Fulton and Laurent Duvernay-Tardif can lock down their roster spots and that pushes out a more expensive veteran type player because you think that LDT can really develop into something consistent and maybe he takes over the left guard spot in the future or something like that, that's a good thing. But it still makes that Faniaka signing a mistake in retrospect if he doesn't make the team. And that's not, there's no subjectivity there. That's just straightforward. Center is Eric Cush, first on the depth chart. Mitch Morse is obviously second right now. Jeff Allen is currently listed as the starting right guard with Donald Stevenson as the starting right tackle. But Zach Fulton has gotten time at right guard. Jeff Allen's gotten time at right tackle. And Derek Sherrod has gotten time at right tackle. Sherrod's listed as the number two right tackle right now. If the offensive line was to go into the season as currently constituted right now, it would be Fisher, Grubbs, Cush, Allen, Stevenson. And then at that point, though, I would think that if Stevenson or Fisher were to be injured, that Jeff Allen would then go to the tackle position and Fulton would step up at right guard, or maybe even Mitch Morse would step up at guard. But if Stevenson and Fisher's obviously the starting left tackle, but if Stevenson starts at tackle, I'm not sure if the Chiefs how many tackles the Chiefs would actually carry. Because Allen's a little bit flexible, and Mitch Morse is certainly flexible, Zach Fulton would step into Allen's spot no problem. Seems like they like Sherrod, try to get him his snaps. So maybe you go in with Fisher, Stevenson, Sherrod, Allen, Fulton, Morse, Cush, Fisher, and Grubbs and Tardif. There's a lot of names there that I think the Chiefs are going to be trying to shove onto this team. That's not including Faniaka. And that's probably considering that Mitch Morse is a very versatile backup. And if Morse is not starting, he can fill so many holes that we're going to have some surprise cuts from the offensive line. Tight end is Travis Kelce. And then another bright spot so far from the team has been James O'Shaughnessy, the rookie tight end. I think we're going to see some good stuff from O'Shaughnessy. Not huge stuff, not huge numbers, not even that consistently, but I think we'll see some flashes from him. Demetrius Harris is the true number two tight end of this group, but he is listed at the bottom of the depth chart because he has been injured. Already talked about the other receivers. Alex Smith, Chase Daniel, Aaron Murray, Tyler Bray, all obvious there. Tyler Bray has not played yet because of his injury issues. And then Charkandrick West is the number three running back as we talked about earlier. Let's check out the defense. Mike DeVito is currently listed as the starting left defensive end with Mike Catapano behind him. Interestingly, though, Raheem Nunez-Roches, who I talked about earlier in the nose tackle conversation, is listed as a left defensive end, which is surprising from everything else we've heard about Nunez-Roches when he was drafted, everything leading up this far, especially in the absence of Dontari Poe. I really expected him to get a lot of time in the middle of the defensive line. So seeing him as the third left defensive end is a little bit strange. And we know Mike DeVito might end up playing some nose. Catapano, who missed all of last season, has shown some flashes in his past. I'd like to see him make this team. Nunez Roches, though, being at a defensive end spot on the depth chart is one of the stranger things that I've seen so far. Nose tackle is Jay Howard, and that's essentially it. Hebron Finagupo is the number two nose tackle there, with Charles Tuau, who I've talked about a little bit in the past, as three, and then Poe listed as four again because he's just not playing. Right defensive end, Alan Bailey, is far and away at the top. And then again, because of the strangeness of this depth chart, Nick Williams is listed as another right defensive end, but we're going to see him play some in the middle. So we know that Alan Bailey is a defensive end and that Jay Howard is a nose tackle with how it works right now. Everybody else seems, and Catapano's an end. Everybody else in that nose tackle defensive end group could probably be shuffled in basically any order. And that's just sort of how the body types play out for a 3-4 defense. Now, with a 4-3 defense, you would never take a 4-3 defensive end and try to put him at nose tackle. You're playing more of a speed guy there. But keeping in mind that the real pass rushing from this team comes from the outside linebackers, those defensive ends and nose tackles could really be moved around a lot. So don't take that too terribly seriously, even though I did get kind of hung up on the Nunez Roches thing, because that's really strange. Linebackers are pretty straightforward. Nothing to be shocked about there. Although Ramiq Wilson is the number two left inside linebacker. James Michael Johnson, who played significantly last year, looks like he might not make this team. And DJ Alexander, who I said earlier is going to have to make the team on special teams, is currently listed as the number two right inside linebacker behind Derek Johnson. Hopefully Wilson and Alexander both make this team pretty smoothly. Tom Bahaly and Dee Ford, obviously on the right outside, although Frank Zombo, who also we've seen get some significant playing time, is the third right outside linebacker. Seeing guys like James Michael Johnson, Frank Zombo, Josh Martin, all three of those guys are currently listed as third string at their positions. And I think that speaks to the depth that the Chiefs have put together at linebacker right now. And by the way, the Aldon Smith discussion that the Niners released him after another issue, there's no reason for that conversation to get to Kansas City, because the Chiefs are so deep at linebacker, which is a very good thing, because last year that depth was not there. They bring in those two rookies though. You trust Josh Malga. You gave him a new deal. Derek Johnson is back, hopefully fully healthy. That's pretty straightforward, and that depth is just the Chiefs hugely invested in the depth there, and it's very important. And I'm very glad to have it, because the run defense last year was a gaping hole in an otherwise very solid defense. The corners, Phillip Gaines is the number one left corner, with Marcus Peters as the number two, Marcus Cooper the number three. Cooper and Jeremy Macklin got in a little bit of a scuffle. Cooper's going to be in a real fight to make this team. I hope he does, just based off of his actual play in training camp in the preseason, because you want to have as many good corners as possible. Peters will ultimately, I think, be starting in place of Sean Smith, the obvious number one corner. Jamel Fleming and Steven Nelson are the other two guys who I think will certainly be making this team, based off the pass for Fleming and based off his draft stock and hopefully his performance in training camp, for Steven Nelson. Ron Parker, Tyvon Branch, and Kelsey McCray are the strong safeties. Hussein Abdullah, Eric Berry, Daniel Sorensen, and Sanders Cummings are the free safeties. Again, a lot of names, really, all of those names, I think most people who are listening to this show, we know all of those names. So that'll be interesting to see. The cuts there won't be a surprise. It won't be a surprise if Kelsey McCray is released or if Sanders Cummings doesn't make the team, but we'll know the name if it happens. Currently, the real key here that everyone has been looking forward to, the long snapper battle. Currently, James Winchester is listed ahead of Andrew East, but I've got my money on Andrew East, who got engaged to Sean Johnson, the Olympian, a couple of weeks ago. This show has gone completely off the rails. I apologize if he fell asleep. Maybe this is a good lullaby. Speaking of lullabies, I got to go to bed after I finish producing this show and then get up again after about 4 hours of sleep. So that's going to do it for this episode of Ref from the Kicker here on Arrowhead Addict Radio, arrowheadaddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. You can tell me anything you want to tell me about the show, about training camp, anything you want to hear, any opinions you want to get on this show, by tweeting me at JBBriscoe, B-R-I-S-C-O, on Twitter and in the AA comments here. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes, never miss an episode. And also, congratulations to Will Shields, officially inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Had the pleasure of meeting him on several occasions at his gym in Kansas City, 68's Inside Sports, and has never been anything but as nice as you hear the stories about him being. So nothing I can really break down there other than to say congratulations to Will Shields, who deserves it on every level. always proud to have Will Shields as a member of the Chiefs family. Hopefully this show is worth enshrining someday. Excuse me, sir, thanks for listening. Bye, Mom. Please.